In this episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, we will be interviewing Legacy, Dark Age of Britain, Neverwinter Nights 2 Persistent World. So sit back and relax and get all the information on this great new Neverwinter Nights 2 server.
This is so exciting! Wow! Where to begin?
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian.
Hey, this is Ben, a.k.a. A. Rowan.
And this is the 133rd episode of the only Neverwinter Nights community podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights role-playing game series. I wanted to start off the podcast today. I wanted to give a special thanks to Jay and Trey for entrusting us with the Neverwinter Nights podcast. We are very honored and humbled that we were chosen to take over this great establishment and continue the great work that Jay and Trey and everybody who has been a part of the Neverwinter Nights podcast prior to us to give us this opportunity to continue it on. We will be doing our best job to continue on this work and to provide you with the best possible community content and information and news about the Neverwinter Nights 1 and Neverwinter Nights 2 game series. Once again, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, Brian, you got that completely right. Trey and Jay, you know, again, there can't be enough thanks for what you guys have done thus far, and I think we're all kind of looking forward to trying to match the level of quality and level of entertainment you guys provided.
Well, quite a lot has gone on in the Neverwinter Nights community since the last podcast where we had discussed the news from Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2 community. We've got a lot of good stuff here. Ron, why don't you get us started on going over the new Persistent World for Neverwinter Nights 1.
Thanks, Brian. Tonight's Neverwinter Night news is about the Persistent World Ages of Nordok. Ages of Nordok is a module based off of the original classic Nordok module, with some general updates for what the developer's vision of what Nordok would be if it had been made in today's gaming world and times. Some general highlights of the Ages of Nordok are that their death system does not penalize you experience points for dying, as they view dying as penalty enough. However, a monetary donation is made to the church every time you respawn. They have a chat line emote system, which gives a very flavorful code that adds some charm and capabilities to the role-playing possibilities for your day-to-day gaming. They also have a persistent bank and some various systems to ensure that you get a spell share feature for those whose wizards and sorcerers die too often, or that you're afraid of your wizards and sorcerers die. Basically, they're also including Forgotten Realms deities and gaining their favor, like it would in the lore, would benefit you. And that benefit can range anything from small chance to tricking death to gaining divine favor. Deities add a nice backdrop and additional sources of RP. That's it for Neverwinter Nights 1. Back to you, Brian.
That server sounds really interesting, and it sounds like the guys over there at Ages of Nordok really spent a lot of time to, you know, work on this persistent world and add a lot of new features to it and bring a lot of life to it. So I encourage anybody to check them out. They're on the IGN Vault, and we have a link to their website posted on our show notes. So give them check them out. Neverwinter Nights 2, I got some more community-based work that I had been scouring through the vault over the last couple weeks, looking for new and interesting community resources. One of them that I found that a lot of builders will be happy to find is a new sewer tile set by Tupon. I have the link to that in the show notes as well, but it's a full tile set. I mean, there's a few tiles that are still missing, but I believe they're going to be filled in very shortly. But I have looked at and downloaded it. It's a very detailed and well walk meshed tile set with a reasonable poly count. So, you know, it's very well done in for performance and for vision. and how it looks in the game and everything. It's very realistic looking. It's very comparable to the RWS sewer tile set, but it's just a lot more detail, and with the walk mesh and everything, the polygon counts being better. It's just a win-win for any new area development for a persistent world or a module. If you have any CD type sewer setups and stuff that you would like to, you know, throw a good new sewer tile look, this would be the one for you to check out. Also, underneath of the Neverwinter Nights 2 prefab areas, I found a very interesting prefab area. It's called Affleca Joaquin's Promenade. And what it is it's looks to be based in Darreloon. I mean, we have an area very similar to that on our server as well. Like a market district in near there. A lot of signature Joaquin paraphernalia and different banners and things, and it's very detailed. I mean, I was very impressed with the level of detail that they had put on into it, and it was very well done. Also, I would say that, you know, if you have a module or persistent world that needs like a desert slash, you know, market area like that, where it's like a hub of society or slash community, I think this would be a great addition to your persistent world or module to incorporate. And it would require very little work. I mean, I even checked over the walk meshes and all that kind of stuff, and it's very well done. You know, it should be perfect, easy addition to just fill in and use for whatever you need. Also, I've got a couple other ones. There's a Neverwinter Nights 2 Mask of the Betrayer Makeover for Storm is a Year Edition by Brendan Bellina. It's basically what it is that they have incorporated the Storm is a Year material into the Mask of the Betrayer, like the systems and different things like that. It's a collection of scripts, items, modules, and UI modifications that can be applied to Neverwinter Nights 2 Mask of the Betrayer campaign. So it just enables the Storm is a Year features. It's very well done, and it works very well. I downloaded it, checked it out myself, and it's fantastic. So if you like to leverage the Storm is a Year systems in Mask of the Betrayer, it's a great addition, and you know, I encourage you to download it as well. A link to that will also be in the show notes. On other Neverwinter Nights 2 news, from the Realms of Trinity, which is our server, we had just rolled out the last segment of our SSR, or Spawning System Randomization System. It is a PC / party mob scaler, so that we have a full database control over our spawners already, and they are randomized already. But the last step that we did was we wanted to be able to make our world to be scaled from whether you were a solo player who would like to go experience our server as a single player, or if you like to party up with people in large groups, it would scale proportionately depending on how many players are in a given area. And it also helps in server resources. Instead of statically spawning in a bajillion creatures front and, you know, just and hoping everybody's forcing people to party with each other everywhere, you know, we take it from that model to basically when we design and develop our product, that we make it so that we have like 1 to 2 players in mind instead of having 4 to 5 maybe. That allows, it's basically a win-win, and it allows everybody to feel comfortable, be happy with what we got going on. So it's very exciting, and our players are very happy to see that. Information that will also be in the show notes for that section and for that new feature of Realms of Trinity. We also have a segment on our forums where we discuss our Realms of Trinity version 3, which is our architecture backdrop to Realms of Trinity expansions, where we add a lot of new features and things that the players can experience that are on top of the Neverwinter Nights 2 game engine. So I'd encourage anybody who has interest in looking, whether you're another persistent world and you were looking for some features that you'd like to ask us some questions on or give you some help to transfer to your persistent world, or just experience yourself in our persistent world, please send me a private message or post on our forum podcast. And closing out the news, also about the Neverwinter Nights podcast, we have just completed a full website reskin to closer align the website to the Neverwinter Nights 2 brand, and we also added a new forum. Well, so if you click the forum link on the right side of our Neverwinter Nights 2 podcast page, you can go right to our new forum, which is, you know, you can sign up there and you can leave us messages, questions for future interviews, and suggestions. So, you know, if you would like to get in on that, please check us out there at www.nwnpodcast.com and click the forums link on the right hand side of the screen. And we have the guys here from Legacy of the Dark Age of Britain. Let's get it started. And this is Brian. Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian.
Hey, this is Ben, a.k.a. A. Rowan.
This is Z, a.k.a. Zeus.
This is Troy, a.k.a. Server Admin at Legacy Dark Age of Britain.
Hey, this is Jacob, a.k.a. Sonic Entity. I'm the build lead at Legacy Dark Age of Britain.
And you're listening to the only Never Winter Nights podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for being on the show with us today. Why don't we start out by having you guys tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Well, thank you for having us on the show. I'm Troy. I'm Server Admin at Legacy Dark Age of Britain, which is a Never Winter Nights 2 persistent world. By day, I am an overworked, underpaid attorney, and by night, I am an overworked, underpaid administrator. Psionic Entity, a guy named Psychic Toaster, Magic Chicky, other of us, started making this persistent world about a year ago. Took us a year's worth of development time to, from, you know, stripped from conception all the way through launch. We launched December 10th. We've been going strong ever since. We can be found underneath the Roleplay tab in the GameSpy server window, or you can log on to our site at legacydarkage.com, all one word, to get the IP details and check out our forums and other stuff you'd add, Cy?
Sure. I'm Cy. I do the dev work down at Legacy. Basically, I just want to say that we've been working for a long time on this server. We've got a lot of interesting new stuff in there. So me, I'm actually not a DM. I don't do any sort of admin work. I just sit there and I make things all day. I make quests, classes, scripts, all that sort of stuff. And, yeah, that's about all.
Yeah, that's excellent. These guys got a really good start on everything, and we got a lot. We share the same pains, actually, so our stuff as well, and the other people we've interviewed as well. So they all seem to have the same similar roles. overworked and underpaid. What got you into interesting in creating a Neverwinter Nights 2 PW? What was the vision?
I started playing Neverwinter Nights Persistent Worlds about 2 years ago while studying for the bar. I don't know why. I was really bored one summer, and it was a break from the monotony, and it took me away from studying more, although I passed, so I guess I didn't do too bad. But anyway, so I kind of bounced around a few servers. I've always kind of aimed towards more what are known as hardcore heavy role-playing servers, i.e. where you have to be in character all the time. There's a limited number of deaths, or there's some type of, you know, death system, so it's not you just running around spawning at will without any kind of penalty. And over the course of those 2 years, I kind of found the experience to be lacking, and I thought I could do it better. And at one point, I signed up and said, hey, I'll be a DM on the Frontier Reborn, which is a now-since-dead server. But I kind of got hooked and then got into it on the DM side. And as I took over admin of that server, there were a lot of problems and kind of lore setups. The server had kind of run its course. So I thought, hey, we got a team in place. Why don't we do something new and build something that we can kind of learn from the mistakes we made and make something new and better? When I was looking at what to do in terms of vision for the server, I had a few goals. One is I wanted to do a non-Faerun / Forgotten Realms based setting, just because I felt like that was really done well and done to the point of being overdone by other servers. I didn't think I could really compete with them or Sundren or A Land Far Away. There's a lot of different PWs out there for people looking to explore parts of the Forgotten Realms, and so I wanted to explore some other lore that I was in. At the time, I was reading a great book series called The Winter King, which is about this kind of Dark Age, lower fantasy version of the Arthurian tales, and it really kind of struck a chord with me and inspired me, and I thought, hey, that'd make a great PW setting where we can take real-world religions and have kind of much more gray moral conflict, and it's not just, not just Ilmateri and, Helm guys going out against Baenites. There'd be, questionable moral issues on either side. And so I wanted to do that setting, and I kind of gathered the team, and I also went out looking for other people. Psionic Entity it was a great and fortunate day, the day that I got a random email or PM from him saying, hey, I'd like to join the team. He's made some amazing stuff for this server that really turned it into technically a far more advanced server than I ever hoped to build. If it had just been me, it would have been a crapshoot of just recycled standard Neverwinter Nights stuff, whereas he's basically given us a complete custom suite of content, scripts, and classes, etc. The other goal that we had, and where the PW takes its moniker from, is called Legacy. It was the idea that we wanted to reward players for role-playing even when DMs aren't around. As many DMs as we all like to have, the truth is that it's a volunteer business and that nobody gets paid, so there's always going to be a limited amount of time that DMs can devote to the thing. So we wanted to reward players for role-playing and being on the server even when DMs aren't around. So based on that, every player on Legacy has a Legacy score that we call Legacy Points, and those Legacy Points are basically an amalgamation of their in-character actions and fame, their notoriety within the PW world. And over time, players can recommend each other for actions that they witness, and that's how you, in addition to what level you are, you kind of gain your in-world power, fame, and reputation, and you can, and coming with that, as your score gets higher and higher, you can unlock custom classes, you get custom spells. We're working on a system for land holdings that, well, Cy will testify to that, that we've been thinking and trying to build that for about 6 months now. I swear one day we will get it done, and we'll be in game, and people will be able to have their own holdings and forts, mines, and all sort of things. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into it and what the idea behind Legacy is, or at least from my end.
That's really cool.
All right, well, thanks for the glowing review, Troy. That was nice. myself, I've been around, I could say. I've been, I started Neverwinter Nights 1 when I was about 12, actually. A friend of mine, I played D&D with at the time, of course. We were just kids, bought the game, and I bought it too. And I ended up playing a Warhammer PW for about 2 days or something like that, but that sort of got me thinking. Neverwinter Nights 2, I've been playing since the game came out. Basically, the first thing I did was I torrented it, of course, and then after a little while, I decided I was going to buy it to play online. So I got myself a copy, and I've been playing PW since the first PW was set up, actually, a long time ago. So, suppose I've been to 5 or 6. I spent 3 years on one particular world, actually, the Forgotten Realm. Not even sure if it's really still around anymore, but that was one of the bigger servers at the time. That sort of got me interested in the whole building and DMing thing. I had a character that was pretty, I don't know, I did a lot with them, so I decided that I wanted to add my own sort of touch to the server, so I applied as a dev. And over one summer, I ended up building a bunch of areas, doing some scripting and stuff like that. And, of course, regardless of all the work I ever put in, that server went downhill. So for a while, I just sort of developed content that I put up on the vault or just tested myself. And I became sort of a script monkey, I guess. I started going to school for math and computer science, so that was just really my thing. And then one day I'm browsing the Citadel forums because a guy called Payne or Brian decided he was going to promote them on the IRC chat for Neverwinter Nights. And I noticed that Troy here had made up a little post about his server. At the time, I was working on a bunch of combat feats, like shield bashing and doing some interesting moves with swords and stuff like that. I'd unlocked a few animations, and I downloaded some, I guess, a library of scripts written to simulate game combat. So from there, it was just like, oh, hey, I should go and see what these guys think, maybe get some of my stuff into the server. And then it sort of just, well, I guess I could say it spiraled out of control, because next thing you know, 8 months down the line, we got a server to put out.
That's cool. I mean, it sounds like you've done a lot of custom content work.
Oh, yeah, tons.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's we've been putting out shouts and call-outs to other dev people to, you know, to encourage them to be putting stuff out, to have like a cross-partnership between this, you know, all the content creators, as it is on the Vault, to continue that, because that really does enrich the entire Neverwinter Nights 2 platform, period, not just Persistent World.
I completely agree with that position, and I'm continually disappointed with the community and how reluctant a lot of people are to share things. When we took down the Frontier, actually, we put up the entire Persistent World on the Vault. So if anybody out there wants to run a 4-year-old Persistent World, just go ahead and download it. I think we should probably get to the point somewhere where we share some of the legacy stuff. The problem with Legacy is it's all so custom that I'm not sure how well it translates to sharing. But to the extent that we can, I think everybody in the community should share, because, you know, there's no reason not to. I don't think, you know, if you're really competing over some small dev feature, I think you've lost the force of the trees. I'm not sure that saying applies here. But anyway, yeah, I agree that sharing content is important. We've been talking with Payne. I think we shared our spell list with him, so that spell work I think that he's doing with 2DA files will be compatible with us at least.
We currently use Cadran's PRC, and that's very much, he spent countless hours working on that thing for all, you know, Persistent Worlds and other people that he used for modules and stuff. And that's the exact same type of mentality, I think, that's really, you're right, it is, it's just fantastic when you have a lot of different people share their content like that. Regardless of how well it scales to something else, I mean, at least you get some ideas from other people's work, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'd just like to throw in my two cents there. I think Cadron has done an amazing job of what he's been doing with the classes and things like that. I don't even know if he's still active, but...
Yes.
Not a lot of developers like that are able to get their things onto servers, and I think that having a dev whose stuff has been able to be up on the vault and then into a server without him actually being part of that server staff, that's a huge advancement that, in my opinion, came way too late for when everyone turns to. I mean, a lot of I've actually talked to some server admins before Troy, trying to, you know, see if they would take some of my stuff for their server, and it's a difficult thing to do. I mean, not all servers are willing to take custom content, and not all content creators are willing to put it up. I think it's definitely something the community as a whole needs to move towards.
That's actually how I got involved with the Realms of Trinity. I started creating custom content for it by Kama's request, and that was before I even played on there. So, do you guys have a background story for the Dark Age of Britain? Is there a background to it, or is the story actually being developed as the players are playing on it?
I'll take that one. As you know, in addition to being the server admin, you know, Cy and I kind of have split it up to where I handle the story stuff and the DM team, and he handles the building stuff and the hardware stuff. Although I build some, and he helps create stories because he creates areas and. You know, so there's a cross-pollination. But in terms of the background story, I'd say the answer is both. It's a player initiative shaped PW, so the story is completely 100% reactive to the actions taken by players and player initiative. You know, we had a band of raiders called the Black Shields who were terrorizing the country that the Persistent World is set in, but through player actions, they've been driven out, and so the areas were changed to reflect that. The idea is to have a living, breathing world as close to basically 6th century Britain plus magic and what that would look like. The background setting is it's our own take on kind of the classic Arthurian setup. It is set in 6th century, whereas kind of, you know, once in future King Arthur is more kind of high feudalism, whereas this is more 6th century. The Anglo-Saxons have invaded from Germany and have taken over most of Britain, and so the server is set in Wales with the in a country called Gwent, which is one of the last 6 remaining free Britain kingdoms, and so it's set against in this time of a massive invasion of Saxons. Players are cast as people inside Gwent, and soon we'll be growing that to all of Wales, So the background is basically that the High King, Uther the Pendragon, who is Arthur's father in all of the various tales, died about 10 years ago. And since that time, there's been no High King for the Britons to unite the various countries against the invading Angles and Saxons. And so, fast forward 10 years later, each Britain kingdom has its own king, and they're all kind of petty and divided about whether or not to war with the Saxons or try to make peace with them, and that's when the players come in. Players can play whatever concept they think of. We try to keep players realistic in their concept. Some people want to come and play a samurai, was my favorite example. It just doesn't really... It's not really what the PW is going for, to have a samurai in 6th century Britain. But, you know, whether they be a Saxon outcast or so, you know, a Frank from the mainland. It's kind of a pseudo-historical persistent world in that way. If you log in, you'll kind of learn a lot that you may not have known about the existence of this time period, what's called, you know, sub-Roman Britain, after Rome, which conquered most of Britain in the, you know, 1st century AD through 5th century AD, pulled out. There was this massive immigration of Angles and Saxons, and there was a war that took place, and of course history would tell us that the Angles and Saxons won out, and, you know, intermixed with the Britons until the French came in several centuries later. But so the idea is basically a pseudo-historical version of 6th century Britain with magic and Arthurian creatures intermixed. So you'll have, you know, ladies of the lake, hags, trolls, giants. We also pull a little bit from Irish mythology. There's some Fomorians and the Tuatha De Danann. I'm not sure I'm even pronouncing that correctly. Yeah, that's basically the premise, and once we kind of set that in motion, then we say it's up to the players to do whatever they want to do. You know, we hope that one day there'll be player-led factions, there'll be maybe even player lords with holdings and their own knights having sworn fealty to them. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, that's a really unique perspective, too, for any story backdrop to use. a feudal time like that, and actually somewhat basing it on real world scenario as well, just with a little twist on it for yourself. I mean, I think that's fantastic.
Just real quick here. Now, do the players, when they come in, are they restricted to fighting against the Saxons, or can they do they join up? Can they have the option of playing either side?
You know, we talked about that, and we talked about allowing both Saxon and non-Saxon sides, and we decided, one, we weren't sure we could get the player population necessary to support a real two-faction system, because our setting has it so that it's kind of a kill-on-sight thing. You know, Saxons are not friends of Britons, and if you know, these are people who invaded and took over half your country. There's an ongoing, you know, war, and each season there's raids, etc. So what we do is the players have to be in Gwent, so they have to find their own backstory to explain why they would show up in Gwent. And they can be born of Saxon or Frank or any other ancestry, Angle or Pict or whatever you want to have it. They just have some reason to explain why they're in Gwent and why they're not an agent on behalf of the Saxons. We had players who were exiled Saxons who had converted to Christianity and sworn fealty to Gwent, but it is a Brit server, at least for the time being. At some point in the future, if there's really a demand for it, we could entertain ideas on how to allow for that kind of two sides faction system. But, you know, with Persistent Worlds, it's hard enough to launch a PW just to begin with, but then to then launch that PW and build in from the very start a fundamental split in the player population, ranks around 15 to 25 people. I don't think we can really support that and still have enough to do on the, during the downtime for players to have fun.
Okay, how would you classify your type of PW? Whether you're RP, action, adventure, and what's your magic level? High, medium, or low?
All right, well, in terms of other PWs, this would definitely be a little heavier on the RP side, although there's definitely some aspects of action adventure there. We're probably intending to add more static content, so in the future we'll probably shift a little towards the action adventure side of things. But really, at its core, the server is definitely more of an RP server. As far as the magic setting, well, there's some mixed opinions on that. First off, we have a level 8 cap, and then after that we use an E8 system, which I guess I could talk about, but really it's just bonus feats instead of levels once you're past level 8. But into that, we've built it so that a level 8 character on Legacy is a whole lot stronger than a level 8 character in a regular D&D setting. So what we have is sort of this idea where there's no magic items now per se. They're very rare. There's some people don't even believe they exist, and that's reasonable. Something like Excalibur in Arthur's time would be considered a magic weapon. So in that sense, it's very low magic. People who are used to going into servers and seeing magic belts and magic hats and magic bows and things like that, they'll not be seeing that here. But at the same time, the magic that can actually be cast by characters is just as potent as anything in Neverwinter Nights 2. The spell system I've done up, a lot of higher level Neverwinter Nights 2 or D&D spells have been lowered down to level 4 or 3, where they can sort of be more accessible to these characters and more like, The roleplay potential of these spells is just as it would be in a Dungeons and Dragons game, except that now it's not super powerful. You can't go and kill 1,000 peasants with a single spell or something like that. So in that sense, it's definitely a full magic server. Magic exists. It's powerful, and PCs can wield it. So I would classify us, I guess, as sort of a mid-magic server, and definitely the hardcore in the RP style, though.
I would add to that, you know, the nature of the setting kind of dictated a few decisions. Like, one thing is Christianity is a real legend that, you know, PCs can worship and talk about and debate as it existed then in the 5th century, or 6th century. And based on the idea that Christianity is itself an entire legend around the idea of a single resurrection having occurred, there is no raised death spell. A few other kind of higher, what I consider to be higher magic, more fantastical things aren't allowed. We don't have summoning spells. Those are kind of made more for lore decisions than balancing decisions. So our casters tend to be much more kind of, you know, to use MMO speak, they tend to be much more blasters and debilitators than they are summoning or resurrecting people. We have priests, druids, and magicians are the three base caster classes. Druids base between those three, the magicians are kind of the blaster class. Priests focus on healing generally, and druids are kind of debilitators slash buffers, although they each kind of have their own spells. In terms of the magic system, another thing that we did is a fully leveled caster in our world is a extremely powerful being, because we have what are known as spell points. We did away with the idea that at each level you have X number of spells that you memorize as part of our custom classes. Instead, each level you gain more spell points. And those spell points can be used to cast any circle of spell. So a first circle spell costs one spell point, a fourth circle spell costs four spell. By the time you're a level 8 and you have about 34 spell points, you can rip off a lot of high-level spells really quickly and do a lot of damage. At the same time, you could also rip off tons of first circle spells. So based on that idea, the whole idea behind the E8 system is kind of heroic fantasy, i.e. a level 8 character is very powerful when contrasted against a level 1 commoner. You see a level 8 magician roll up, he would be a terrifying thing to a level 1 commoner. But at the same time, because we only allow you to get to level 8 and then after that point start taking feats, there's never any point at which there's an inescapable power gap in the server's life. One of the things that I didn't like about some of the more epic servers is I felt if you weren't right in at launch, you were forever left behind in that level race. And that's not the case on Legacy, because once you reach level 8, you just shifts away from being the exponential power gain that D&D normally is to more of a marginal power gain. And at no point can any single PC on Legacy not be taken down by two or three other PCs of a similar level or even a lower level.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I like it. That's a lot of custom work, Gary, you did. That's an epic amount of work to do all those from scratch.
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, Psionic Entity has done a ton of work. A guy named Psychic Toaster, who we had on staff, did a lot of work for this magic system. It's been a major undertaking. Another thing I should mention as part of the magic system is you don't automatically learn spells upon level up. This is kind of our idea that while a fully leveled caster is very powerful, you have to earn it. And so in our persistent world, each spell that a caster wants to learn, he has to actually go out and learn in the world, whether that be from completing a quest or from completing a DM'd event where the DM then gives the command to teach that spell, or whether it be from using a placeable, or one of the cooler things actually that Psionic Entity did was we have what's known as spoken spell word learning, where a caster can be given a hint from a DM or a quest to go to a certain area and say a prayer or say a certain phrase, and upon saying that, they learn a spell. Kind of our idea of making static content to support the role-playing aspects of the caster class, and the whole idea behind it is to kind of, because casters are kind of a more specialized thing in our setting than Faerun, which is just, I would describe as very high magic, whereas we're kind of more middle magic, we wanted to build into the persistent world the idea that the caster had to learn how to roleplay his class appropriately in order to progress in his character's powers, i.e. by learning more spells. So every spell learning thing we put in is an opportunity to teach the players some aspect or lore history of that caster's class. For example, druids, over the course of them learning spells, they'll learn about the Black Year, which was a purging of druids by the Romans in the 1st century AD and in the Roman Empire's attempt to pacify Britain. That's kind of based in history. There is such a thing as a Black Year that you can find out on the various Wikipedias. I'm not sure how accurate it was. It's also based partly upon this kind of famous diary that was done by an invading Roman general, which is one of the few written pieces of history about the Druids as they actually existed. So, you know, we try to base our stuff kind of on history and maybe a more fantastical view off of that pseudo-history. But yeah.
That is a really neat setup. So how many DMs do you guys have on staff to help run with all this custom content and historically accurate information and all these good things?
You know, it fluctuates. Right now, I think we have 8 DMs total, 2 of which are currently busy with school. At one point, I think we had 10 or 12, you know, but just because you have a DM on staff doesn't mean he's an active DM on staff. We could certainly use more DMs, and we're always happy to bring in new DMs, although ours is because it's a custom setting that's not just Forgotten Realms, it takes a little bit of learning to be able to DM here and have it make sense. And not have you not, you know, do DM some event that just doesn't make any sense with the world or story or universe as it exists. But yeah, we're primarily right now a American primetime server in terms of DM coverage. We have about 6 of our 8 DMs DM during the 6 p.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern time time frame, and so that's when you'll see most of our server numbers. We have two European DMs, and they do their best to support those times. I'm actually looking at a DM application just today for another European DM, so we're always interested in adding more DMs, and yeah, we have about 6 to 8 active ones right now.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Thanks, you know, it's better than a lot of PWs I've been on, but I'm not, you know, I'm never really satisfied with it. I think the, you know, more DM coverage, so long as it's, you know, not in a DM who knows the world and isn't, you know, isn't a DM who's a problem, is always a good thing. So I'll continue to endeavor for more DMs, and if there's anyone out there listening to this who thinks this is really cool, stop Paraforums and send us a DM application. We'd love to have you.
I noticed on your website said that you had a limited number of respawn system effect. How does that work for the players? Is that like a permadeath system, or is it 3 deaths per login or something?
Well, I actually wrote a custom sort of system to go along with the death. The way it works is there is permadeath on the server, and we've had a couple players hit it so far, but it hasn't been common yet. Basically, the way it works is that if you die to an NPC, or basically during a combat in a regular quest, static content, that kind of thing, you'll lose 1 of 3 lives, and as you're down to your last life, you'll have a sort of last chance with no respawn, so really you're alive 4 times. The way it works is we don't roleplay death ever. If a player roleplays dying, they're dead permanently, it's over. There's no sort of respawns, or there's no resurrection. So we do usually ask our players if they're going to lose a life to do it in such a way as to explain why their character is still alive. It's basically a safety net. In terms of player versus player combat, we do have a sort of a one combat death rule. If you fight another player and you both intend to kill each other, we have a mode that you can set that says, yes, I want to kill a player, and then you have them, and then if both players are in this setting, basically whoever dies will be permanently killed. But to sort of counteract that, we have a setting that any player can set that has them as sort of a not PvP death mode. It's called non-lethal mode, but that's a little, I wouldn't say the wording is incorrect, but it's not exactly what it means. Non-lethal death is essentially saying that, no, I'm not ready to lose my character to a fight with a player now. So if there is a character out there who wants to kill mine and he's in this lethal mode, then I'll need to change up my roleplay, change up how I approach the server if I want to keep this character alive, or you can just choose to retire them. But essentially, the philosophy behind it is that if your character dies, they're dead. So we use that to sort of build a higher roleplay setting and to make sure that we keep people, I guess, a little bit... the player shouldn't be afraid, but it's essentially a method of keeping things realistic. And I know that I've found on various other servers, or servers that choose to take a little lighter rules on death, you can't really achieve the death of character conflict because there's never any method of resolving it. So we have this death system here, and what I've done now is create a sort of a scripted system to go along with that, because when you're dealing with permanently retiring a character, you can't sort of have little glitches and things like that affect the outcomes. So there's a few scripts that make sure that you can't be ganked while you're basically fighting against NPCs, ganking being sort of a WoW term, but I don't mind using it here. And then another sort of system that makes sure that when you go down, if there's anyone around you who actually wants to heal you, wants to make sure you don't die, they can do that. We have a mandatory 2 minutes after your character falls where they can be healed by any other PC. So it's not the case where you can sort of go down to a random monster or something like that and you're done. And we spent quite a while just perfecting the system, making sure it works, just because we understand that players put a lot of effort into their characters. So that's a huge priority for me as a developer, to make sure that death works properly, and that players, if they do die, they'll realize that it's sort of a fair death, and it'll be something that happened over a course of roleplay, or it'll be something that happens several times over the course of fighting with NPCs.
Yeah, if I could add on to that, the first persistent world, I won't name it, but the first persistent world I played on was a straight permadeath persistent world, i.e. you die one time, whether it be to static content or another player or a DM, you're dead. That was a real harsh rule set, and it was made all the worse by what I viewed to be an abusive DM staff. With that history and experience as a player, when approaching this persistent world, I was very conscious of the dangers of having a permadeath system, even though, again, I would not, you know, I like to call it permadeath light, because really the way we set up the system is if you die on our server, it's really through your own repeated foolish behavior. If you're in a group, it is very hard for you to die, because if you go down, so long as one member of your group survives, they'll have 2 minutes to save you. if you are, and even if you then die that one time, you then have three more, bites at the apple. The other system we have that we've put in is that players start at level 2 on our persistent world, and they will not lose any essences from death until 4. So there's kind of a grace period because our persistent world is not solo grinding friendly in terms of how we've set up the spawns. It's kind of designed to have entertaining group dungeon crawls or exterior dungeon crawls. Permadeath, and I understand that that turns a lot of people off right there, and they'll hear that word and they'll say, I don't want to play there. I'm not losing my character. But I would echo Sai's statement that I think in the 3 months or 2 months now since we've launched, I think there's been a total of 3 or 4 actual notable real characters that progressed to, past level 3 or 4 that actually have died from static systems. And one of those was actually chosenly retired. Actually, that may even be more. I can only think of 2 or 3. I would call it permadeath light, where there's a forgiving bleed system. There's numerous what we call essences or lives where you get to try it again. But again, because Christianity is built around the idea of how miraculous a resurrection is, none of these respawns is actually your character dying and returning from beyond the grave. It's just as we just ask players to explain that they miraculously survived by some happy chance of fate. Maybe they were left for dead. Maybe they were unconscious and found their way back in town. We kind of gloss over that to allow for fun and to recognize that Neverwinter Nights 2, while we love it, is far from a perfect beast, and there are glitches and there are times when things go awry.
With all of this custom content you have going and completely using a different sort of allure than standard Forgotten Realms, you must have had some sort of challenges along the way. You mind talking about some of them?
Sure.
I'll start on the Neverwinter Nights 2 end of things. I think sort of a running joke in the line of devs and stuff in the Neverwinter Nights community that Obsidian sort of, well, I wouldn't say half-assed, but they left a lot of things undone with the game. There are so many things that I personally would love to be able to do with Neverwinter Nights that I'm not going to be able to. But at the same time, I think that provides a challenge to any sort of developer who wants to make something happen. And honestly, that's what's driven me to do a lot of the different projects I've taken on, just the challenges of working with this Obsidian system. In terms of our PW, though, there's a lot of challenges associated with being a dev that aren't just development. I mean, I've had challenges getting the right scripts in order. Bugs, of course. I mean, no one writes a perfect system. So I've had a lot of bug reports to fill out, and usually I'm pretty good about that. I guess players could attest to that more than I could. But I think the biggest challenge I've had to face is that people need to get used to a system that's not like Dungeons & Dragons. And so far, I'm actually surprised at how awesome players have been about taking this completely new system and playing with it, trying out all the new classes, testing balance is a big one. I mean, of course, there are players who disagree with our interpretation of things, and I frequently patch things, update things, and things like that. So I think it's the challenge is sort of creating a system that's new and that players will accept. And at the same time, I think our player base has been really good about that. I mean, I was expecting way more sort of balanced topics or people coming to me and saying, hey, you should do this, this, and this, and things like that. But really, most of the suggestions have been reasonable. So, I mean, if I could thank anyone, it's our player base for how awesome they've been with this system. And overall, it's made something that's pretty challenging into an enjoyable sort of pursuit. And I guess I'm just sort of the person who likes that kind of thing, but really the challenge of making something happen in Neverwinter Nights 2 is what sort of drives a lot of creative people, not just myself.
All except for the rogue, right? those rogue class players, they don't mess with their class, man.
Oh, I know.
They got opinions.
Everybody else, but I don't know.
No, I can, I will say a few things in Sai's behalf because he has been a little bit modest. The classes that he made are really awesome. Most of them are kind of reinterpretations of some of the Dungeons & Dragons classes as it suits our setting. The challenges faced is, we launched... Technically, we launched the server with 100 areas, and our aim was to launch a fully functioning server, whereas a lot of servers will launch in beta, quote-unquote, and then kind of patch their way up to really being a complete server over the course of a year or two. We tried to jump ahead of that and launch the fully functioning server, so there was a lot, there's a lot of bugs that come with that just because people think they tested something and they still find some bug or for whatever reason. I can attest to the fact that Sai patches things. It's crazy how frequently he patches our server. We probably do 3 or 4 server updates a week, and we've been doing that now for 2.5 months with new areas, new systems, bug fixes, etc. Each time. Bigger challenges for me, though, on the admin side, like I would suspect is true for every other PW out there, is handling the human aspect of running a volunteer staff. For every one psionic entity out there who comes in and is just a workhorse, tirelessly and faithfully performs his duties, you get people who come in and say, "Hey, I'm all excited, let's do this," and then after a week they drop away. Or you get people, you get personalities who are unwilling to compromise. Or you get personalities who are, just managing that aspect of a staff is a really challenging thing and is really the hardest thing for me to do as an admin, just because each person is different, and how to get a person to volunteer their time and to give up fun aspects like playing on the server or doing some other server that's already built to, put in what is essentially work, that's a challenge, and I'm still struggle with it daily, and I'm not sure. I try to motivate our staff. It's a hard thing to do. It's, as admin, I sometimes think it's my responsibility to kind of keep excitement going on the staff side and keep the staff excited about what we're doing, because that excitement is infectious. And I found that when someone sticks their neck out to do something new and to take on an extra bit of work, everybody else will feed off of that and say, "Oh, if he's doing work, then I'll do work too." Whereas if time goes by and it says, "Oh, well, nobody's doing any work, so I won't do any work." Those kind of human challenges have been a big challenge for me. In terms of the server's challenge, I think one of the challenges that was a bit more challenging than I anticipated was how hard it would be to teach the setting to the player base. We have an outstanding player base who have really dived in head first into this lore, and they've taken on the naming system. Welsh names are a thing unto themselves with their own kind of titles and patriarchal naming systems and all of these kind of arcane pseudo-historical details that the player base has learned and soaked up over the last 2.5 months. I thought that by doing an Arthurian setting, even though it's a slightly different Arthurian setting, it would be familiar enough to people that they would feel comfortable in it from the get-go. And I found that, as during the first month, I found that we really need to continually emphasize and teach players from the DM side through events and through our postings on the forums what is just the base facts of what's going on in this world. Because, we'll tell the players that there's a civil war going on between the Saxons, and you'll still see players, I don't know whether it's their player's RP or whether it's the player themselves, or, the player character's RP or the players themselves, misinterpreting or misunderstanding what that basic event.
Yeah, we've been there, done that. The staff, you're right about the staff issue, too. That's something that resonated with me whenever you brought that up about, getting people in that, are gung-ho and whatnot. So, we've had almost the exact same stuff happen with us. And, you do get great people, but then you also do get not so great. And how you deal with it, that's always a challenge, too.
Yeah, I could listen to other admins talk about that all day, because it's a, I haven't gotten to the point where I'm reading, business or leadership books or anything.
Yeah, but,
it's that kind of stuff.
Do a good screening process, but that helps. But at some point, there's always that breaking point. How much can you really screen somebody, legitimately in a position like that?
So you guys have been on live for a couple of months now, and we see you guys have gotten a couple votes on the IGN vote already. Do you plan on mounting efforts to get more votes or getting into the Hall of Fame, or are you guys just kind of happy with how things are going and you figure that'll be signed, they'll come with time?
As to the votes, I think at the time we set this up, we had 5 votes, and then I actually read the questions and saw that we only had 5 votes, I promptly went to my IRC and said, "Hey, players, vote for us, come on." And now we have 10 votes. And so I think it is just a question of me actually forcing our player base to go out and vote for us. I will say, though, I have a bone to pick with the Vault and its game world postings, because I don't know if any of you guys have taken a look at it, but if you take a look at the top 20 or whatever game worlds, like half of them are dead.
Yeah.
And so when you're like, and I think 3 or 4 Persistent Worlds have launched, Neverwinter Nights Persistent Worlds have launched in the last 4 months. Nobody is seeing those Persistent Worlds on that thing. Even when you press show all game worlds, it doesn't show up. I mean, I can say personally that both the Frontier and the Frontier Reborn, two Persistent Worlds that I was a part of, are dead and aren't coming back. So I actually sent a message to, I think it's Beyond the Pale or whoever runs that site, and said, hey, let's clean some of this stuff out, you know, keep the community alive. And he said they can't because of the possibility that they'll come back on live. And I don't think there's any chance that the original Frontier, the Frontier Reborn, are coming back. You know, it is something we care about just because it is a form of advertising. I found the first PW that I tried out through the Vault, and so I do think that is kind of a market center for people who are getting interested in Persistent Worlds that they take note of and will occasionally visit. It's a little bit gamey because if you go look on it, like in order to be a Hall of Fame, and you look at those rankings, it's who voted 10 the most, and it's like, this, do all of those, you know, 40 people really think each of those Persistent Worlds is a 10? No, they vote 10 because that's the only way to compete with these other Persistent Worlds where all the people came in and voted 10. So it's not really, like, accurate rating. I think the comments are generally more accurate than just seeing 5 players goaded into coming in there and voting 10. That being said, I voted 10 for my own PW on there. So,
as you should. If you slave over it, you gave yourself a 10. Come on.
No self-interest there. It's totally objective.
It's understandable and reasonable in that case, though. Because as you said, I mean, it's something that people use to find out which servers do most people like. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, the more you do to get your name out there, the better off it looks.
Every little bit helps is what I can ascertain from the things that we've done over the years. So, yeah, any little thing you can do to get people seeing your server, it's huge. Especially coming on the podcast, as a matter of fact.
you guys are doing well. You guys are beating us most times. So.
Oh, well, thank you. We try our hardest.
And there's different classes of servers, too. I mean, like, the thing we're kind of doing, which is, you know, very DM-supported, very player initiative and heavy RP, I don't think we could really responsibly have a server population of where we're like 40 or 50 every night. I don't think, you know, we would have to add a lot more DMs to properly support that and still have players having, you know, a meaningful impact on the world. Whenever I see our server numbers climb north of 20, I feel happy and good about ourselves. I think if we got over 30, that would be the part where I would start having panic attacks.
And
15, I'm unsatisfied with. I think, I gotta do some more stuff.
If you're getting 15 or roundabouts, like on average, I think you're doing extremely well. I mean, especially with the actual population of Winter Nights 2 players. I mean, it's not as high as it could be to support those kind of numbers across the boards with all the servers that are out there, just for the sheer fact that there's X servers, you know, that have to be spread across.
It is kind of shocked me that for a game that I think Neverwinter Nights 2 has sold millions of copies, that's pure speculation, I could be wrong, but at least a million, and out of that number of people, only probably a few hundred people play Neverwinter Nights 2 Persistent Worlds. That's always kind of, I always thought there would be more.
A lot of people go after the single player experience in Neverwinter Nights as well. So you mentioned that your DMs are very involved with the world, though. Do you run, like, DM events, DMRP events, DM action events, any sort of thing like that?
Yeah, we do run events. We're trying to teach our player base and trying to encourage and support the idea of player-led events. Like, for example, just tonight, there was a player-organized event to conduct a raid into Saxon lands to recover this, magical sword. And that arose from some events that were set up by DMs, but then players kind of took the reins of that plot and are now going out and actively arranging events consisting of players themselves. And that's something we kind of like to encourage, because then we feel like it's players shaping the world and not just the DM arbitrarily saying, hey, there's going to be a raid on this part and the cell swords can also join in. We think it's a little bit more interesting and interactive if we can have players creating and leading those events. Plus it creates a lot of non-DM required role playing, because there's an event where there's going to be a raid on this stuff and this has to be organized, and that results in all that role playing between each player kind of setting up that time. It also creates a community, because the players have to communicate with themselves out of character to organize a time when they can all be there. We do have DM events, though, regularly. I would say I try to do one bigger event a week, although, you know, my work schedule doesn't sometimes allow for that. It's a mix. You know, some DMs like to do smaller flavor type stuff. Some DMs just like to kind of bring the world alive, and I try to support DMs doing what they find fun because I find that that results in them DMing more. Because if, you know, if you're making them do something that's not fun, then they will have a reduced interest in DMing and doing that task. Some of our DMs are more like one-off kind of plots, like, oh, we'll have this, you know, murder occur in the city, or we'll have a forced marriage, and the, and, you know, players can take one action or support one side or whatever. And then we have a larger, more world structural events, like an invasion by the Saxons or a council of kings from all over Wales, that are kind of much more DM controlled to demonstrate to the players that they are living as part of a much larger world. The previous persistent world I did, called The Frontier Reborn, that was in what I call an island setting, where it was the players come to this island, and then everything that is, happens on that island is completely shaped by the players, because they're the only humans there, and they're interacting with other people. And so it's a much smaller setting where player action determines everything. Legacy, because it's, you know, there's kings, and the players are cast as just, you know, peers or middle classes or serfs inside these kingdoms, there's a lot of bigger machinations going on between the NPCs that are out of the player's hands. And so we'll try to show that through DM'd events. We also have a in-character story forum on our forums that we kind of do posts just announcing news that everybody in the world would know, like, hey, this king was crowned. Everybody in the world should know that this king was crowned for this country. We do DM'd events, but we try to make them more focused on actions being driven by players. If actions aren't being taken by players, then we will just pop in and say, hey, you know, there's an invasion coming. Come here Saturday night, and we'll have some good combat.
Yeah, that sounds like a real good way to do things. I know on our end, you know, we do some RP events, we do some random events, we do a few. Some poor unfortunate made the poor decision to, in shout, say how, you know, I'm immortal and can beat everybody up sort of comments.
And that's definitely where you come in and drop the hammer.
Yeah.
Or the beetle.
Or the beetle.
Yes, or the beetle. Or other fun creatures. But
we dropped the bear.
Ah.
We quite famously had a bug where there was literally a drop bear where a bear would, it was accidentally spawning on top of people.
Oh, jeez.
So it was the drop bear.
I like that.
I do. I like that a lot. Over the course of, you know, the time that you've been running your persistent world, I mean, you're going to have enjoyable moments and things that you, you know, really stick with you as a memorable experiences and stuff. What would you say is your most memorable or enjoyable moment in running Legacy of the Dark Age of Britain?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm actually an odd sort of dev. I don't DM on Legacy. So all my experiences on the server have been on the player side. And I'd say just two things. My dev side, sort of, I have a system in there where players can light grease on fire with burning hands or this sort of spells. And I think the day that our server's sort of most advanced mage discovered that, probably one of my better moments. I mean, something that I put in there is sort of like an Easter egg. I had a player find out about it, and then they were using it all over the place and stuff like that. I just think it was really cool to have some of my work used like that. And on the player side, I mean, I just like role-playing with the people who play on the server. I mean, I play a minstrel because, I don't know, I'm crazy. And I really enjoy just the aspect of going there role-playing in the Dark Ages setting, though nothing really stands out right now. So any event where people are engaged, you can sort of tell when someone behind their keyboard is sitting there looking at everyone for Knights 2 and typing what they think their character is feeling and doing. And I think that when that happens, the role-play is just really what drives me to play everyone for Knights 2.
I'd probably have two favorite moments so far. The first favorite moment was when we launched, because it took me a year and a lot of staff change and a lot of new staffers. It took a very long time to get that server to launch, and it was kind of a, you know, it was a very cathartic experience to finally see this thing that you've been working on and slaving over and testing and doing all this stuff in your spare time to then see it live, launched, players log in, and, you know, hear players raving about this feature, that feature, and to hear, you know, positive feedback is really, as silly as it sounds, I really, you know, live for that positive feedback. It really keeps me going as an admin, because it's, you know, it can be arduous work sometimes dealing with this stuff. In terms of the server life itself, probably one of my favorite moments was when I got to completely surprise Psionic Entity by pulling out a major NPC reveal to the entire server. And I took so much pleasure in the fact that I had kept it secret from, you know, one of the other big staffer, the build lead, and I managed to, you know, bring out Merlin, who had been thought dead for 10 years, and I brought it out, and everybody in the room was just completely shocked and amazed when it happened at this trial event that we were doing, that everybody was there. And I would echo Sai's sentiment that my absolute favorite part of this server is the setting and the roleplay itself. We have, you know, all the bells and whistles made by Sai, and we have a great player community, but I love the setting so much. I think it is so fun, so interesting. You can bring in real-world issues. You're discussing, you know, the roleplay that happens there is, in my experience, the best I've ever seen. In terms of characters that are really believable, that people have played every day of their lives for a prolonged period of times and invested a serious amount of thought in themselves into. That's the reward, and my favorite part of the server is the role play.
Very cool. You got anything in closing before we close off this interview that you'd like to share with the community and forward thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to thank you guys again for doing this interview. I listen to the podcast each episode, and I'm happy to be on the same podcast that the wife of Gary Gygax was on. Yay me. That was a great episode. I also think we should thank our loyal DM team and staffers. I think we should thank Brian Meyer / Payne and Skywing from the Neverwinter Nights CR team, because they are our go-to, hey, I can't figure out why Neverwinter Nights 2 is acting like an idiot. Please help me solve this, and they will help us solve it. I'd like to thank those guys.
Just in terms of closing thoughts, I'd like to thank you guys for the interview. I've never actually heard of this podcast, so I'm going to have to go back and check your archives at some point. You guys seem pretty cool, so I'd like to see what you guys talked about with other people, guests, and things like that. So thank you. I'd also like to just give a shout-out to our player base. We've had some really great players and good RP, and I really like playing with you guys, and I'm going to enjoy it for the next year, however long we keep doing this.
I also like to thank you, too, for coming on. You know, I'm glad that you were able to share, you know, all the work that you've been doing for your server and for the community. It's really refreshing to see the amount of work that you have put in, you know, custom work. I mean, thinking outside the box, too. I mean, we have talked to other servers. I mean, heck, we ran our own for how many years now? You know, it really opens our eyes to even some options that we could even take down the road. I mean, it's just amazing all the work and time that you put into this persistent world. I can't see nothing but the best coming for you, and, you know, and get the word out there to the players to really try something different, you know, not just to rinse, lather, wash, and do the same stuff over again. Actually try it. Open your eyes up, you know, to some of the other types of gameplay. I mean, there's just so much out there that your server offers.
Thank you. Yeah. I love the community, and I think every persistent world, I wish them all the success, because I think the more the merrier. Thank you again.
Thanks for showing up, guys. As Brian said, you know, it's great for us to be here, and it's great to be able to talk to people that kind of give people a chance to see what's going on in different areas.
Yeah, just thanks for joining us, definitely. Thanks for helping keep a great game alive, even if certain developers didn't quite finish it all the way.
Shall we do it together, Sai?
Of course we should.
All right. One, two, all right. Three. Get in game.
Get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights Podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights Podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast is copyright 2010.